This is Fresh Air. On Sunday, the AIDS activist group ACT UP staged a demonstration in Kennebunkport. Yesterday, during President Bush's press conference, he was asked his reaction to the demonstration. In his response, he said he opposed federal funding of needle exchange programs. These programs use a controversial method for preventing the spread of AIDS among IV drug users, who often inject themselves with infected used needles. The programs dispense new, clean needles, free of charge. Opponents argue this condones and contributes to the drug culture. My guest, Rod Sorge, directs ACT UP's needle exchange program in New York City. The program operates in violation of a state law that requires a prescription to carry a needle. There are similar laws in 10 other states. Sorge estimates his program serves 700 or 800 people per week. We asked him to discuss the rationale behind the needle exchange program and how it operates on a practical level. It operates on the philosophy of harm reduction, an approach which says if you can't stop an addict from using drugs, you can try to make the addiction less harmful.
It assumes that you can work with active injectors, which is something that a lot of people don't believe that you can do. And further, it assumes that you can work with active injectors in a drug-using context, and that drug-using context, the street scene, can actually facilitate HIV prevention measures. It does not. It's an expansion of drug services to include people who are not abstinent. It says that you can work with active injectors, that you don't have to be completely abstinent before we can provide you with services, or that the goal of the service has to be to get someone to be completely abstinent.
In New York, New Jersey, California, and about 7 or 8 other states, it's illegal to have a needle without a prescription.
Right.
So in states like that, how do you get a needle if you're a user? Is there a black market for them?
There's a black market. It's not organized. People steal needles from healthcare facilities in large amounts and sell them on the street. People might go to other states to buy them, although that's probably a lot less frequently done. You have to rely on the illegal, you know, black market, which is often chaotic and always uncertain. You can't be certain that you can find a clean needle. You can't be certain that a needle that you bought on the street is actually clean. It might be, you know, used by somebody else, repackaged and sold as clean. People improvise. They sort of make their own syringes out of whatever they can find.
Give us a sense of how the program works. Where do you set up? And how do people find out about you and come to you?
Well, because our program operates technically illegally, we don't have the luxury of having, for example, a storefront or a van that can go around and distribute needles. We also don't have funding for that since we're unfundable. So we're a very sort of low-key operation. We operate in 5 different sites in New York City in 3 boroughs, the Bronx, Manhattan, and Brooklyn. And we literally set up on street corners and parks. Literally, on, you know, if you're walking down the street, you can bump into us because we're right there.
You're right there with tables and chairs right in the middle of the street?
Besides from the parks where there are sort of cement tables and chairs already set up, we just we have everything sort of on the ground. When you talk about street-based, we're definitely street-based. We just, you know, use the sidewalk.
Do you have a little sign saying who you are, you know, saying what the program is?
We don't, but we give out the needle cleaning kits, as I explained, and what that entails is having 6 or 7 buckets with each element of the kit spread out there. So when you come to our exchange, if you're walking towards us, what you see is a group of 4 or 5 individuals with lots of shopping bags all around them and about 5 or 6 or 7 buckets lined up with, you know, cookers and cottons and water and bleach in them. We've relied on the grapevine method of spreading the word. What we did is we tried to make street contacts in the areas where we were. Most of us, the reasons why we set up in the particular areas that we did is that one or several persons on the outreach team had some sort of connection with the area in which we work. Either they lived there or they used to buy drugs there when they were using. Because we're illegal, we couldn't really make large announcements and we couldn't be very visible. So we have to give up some of our visibility for being illegal. It was a slow process of building up the exchange, of letting people know by word of mouth. People who then started using the exchange would bring other people. We have little cards now that advertise the exchange that we give to folks who come to the exchange to give to their friends to come. So people now come to us with these cards and ask, is this where I can get my clean needles? So we've sort of built up our program over the past 18 months from what was, you know, a sort of small-scale distribution program to what's now a pretty significantly large exchange program.
Now, I should mention the reason why you're illegal is because, you know, New York is one of the states where it's illegal to have a needle without a prescription.
Right.
Are you, what kind of agreement do you have with the cops? I mean, they must know where you are if you set up there once a week.
Certainly. I mean, you know, if the city wanted to, they can certainly shut down our program. There's no doubt about that. It depends on the different area. In one area where we have an exchange site, we're literally two blocks from a police station just because that happens to be an area where there are a lot of injectors, where a lot of drugs are bought and sold. We have to set up there. We've only been arrested one time in New York City in the past 18 months, and that was when we openly declared that we would do a needle exchange at a given time on a given day to sort of test and see what would happen. We don't have any written, certainly not even unwritten agreement with any cops. We deal with the situations as they arise. Oftentimes, the police are uninterested in arresting us, either because they see the value of what we're doing, because they're on the streets all the time, and they see what AIDS has done. Most often, I think, probably it's just because they don't want to deal with arresting us, because we always have hundreds and hundreds of dirty works that we've collected from people who've exchanged them. We have lots of clean needles. We have all sorts of other things that they would have to catalog into evidence. I think for the most part, cops just don't want to deal with us.
What was the result of the test case where you declared you were going to be doing this program and giving away needles and you got arrested?
This past June, Manhattan criminal court judge Laura E. Dreger acquitted all of the defendants across the board for needle possession charges. And she actually said that we met all the qualifications for a medical necessity defense. What it came down to is that she decided that any harm that might have resulted from the defendant's actions, if any, was lesser than the harm that that the AIDS epidemic entails. Basically, we knew we broke the law when we did this, but Judge Dreger said that we were justified in breaking the law because of our intent and because she says in her decision that it was very possible that we prevented some HIV infection from happening.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Rod Sorge, and he's the coordinator of ACT UP's New York Needle Exchange Program and also director of the People with AIDS Harm Reduction Institute. We're going to take a short break, and then we'll talk some more. This is Fresh Air. Rod Sorge is my guest, and he's the coordinator of ACT UP's New York Needle Exchange Program. When somebody comes for a new needle from you, do you use that as an opportunity to talk with them about other risks involved with AIDS, about safe sex, and also about trying to kick?
Absolutely. We take as much advantage of the situation, the outreach situation, as we can. Some people, you know, want to remain anonymous and use the program just to exchange their needles and get out of there, and that's totally respected. Anybody can use the program in any way that they see fit as far as anonymity or staying around and talking. We give out condoms through our program. And so we definitely talk about safe sex, as well as a complete discussion of needle hygiene. It's more than not sharing your needles and syringes. We give out needle cleaning kits or bleach kits, which contain bleach and water and a cooker in which drugs are dissolved. Cotton through which they're filtered through the cooker. We give a whole range of drug paraphernalia that can theoretically come into contact with blood when one is preparing or injecting drugs. And so we go through each of those things. We describe how you can clean your needles if you absolutely have to share them with bleach and water. We do talk about drug treatment with people who come to our program, but only if they bring up drug treatment first. We operate on sort of a non-judgmental, in a non-judgmental fashion, and the issue of whether or not people are using drugs is not the issue that we're dealing with. What we want to deal with is how people are using drugs and the behaviors that they're engaging in at a particular time. We certainly do want to get anyone who asks for treatment into treatment. Our main objective for being on the street is to try and cut down HIV seroprevalence rates. So we don't bring up treatment unless the person brings up treatment first.
Now, you say you're trying to be non-judgmental, but I think this is one of the areas that a lot of controversy enters into. I don't need to tell you how controversial these needle mm-hmm. exchange programs are, especially in some cities. David Dinkins, for instance, the mayor of New York, has said that these needle exchange programs are like surrendering to drug abuse. And I think that that's a fairly widely held opinion, that, you know, by giving out free needles, you're sanctioning addiction and you're allowing or even contributing to the flourishing of a drug culture. What's your point of view on that?
I don't think that we're contributing to any drug use whatsoever. We see people who are already injecting and who, after we see them, will continue to inject. What we try to do is put some sort of intervention in between that to make injecting, that they have been doing and that they will continue to do more safely, to enable them to do it more safely. There have been many studies done, and it's certainly, you know, a concern that I have too, or that I had before the studies. You know, do you just want to start giving out people? Is it going to increase injection drug use? Study after study has shown that the mere availability of free sterile needles does not induce anyone to inject. In the many states that we have where there are much fewer or no obstacles to obtaining clean injection equipment, you know, there's no indication whatsoever that people who don't inject drugs will go out and start using needle exchange programs just because the needles are available there. Dinkins, another thing that David Dinkins liked to say is that it's sending mixed messages about drug use to the general public. We're asking what sort of message is Dinkins's position on this sending to active addicts. Basically, the message that it's sending is that you have to abstain from drugs, and we're not really going to help you do that because we can't, you know, expand drug treatment at all, or you can die. That's basically the message that we're sending to active injectors and their sexual partners and their future children right now. People don't have the choice right now, except through using our program, which reaches a limited number of injectors in New York, to practice clean needle hygiene.
But do you ever say to yourself, you know, that when you're giving out needles, you're helping somebody kill themselves in a way because you're helping to contribute to their drug addiction?
I don't see it that way. I see our program as attempting to save lives and as helping people remain seronegative. The fact that there are at least one-third of our outreach teams identify as ex or recovering drug users show that recovery from drug use is possible and that change related to drug using behaviors is possible and that people can modify critical aspects of their drug taking behavior and remain safe from HIV and they can even become abstinent. If you contract the HIV virus, that's not the case. You cannot recover from HIV right now, and there's no indication that soon we will have a vaccine or a cure or even treatments that might be able to keep you alive longer than a few years, especially if you've been using drugs. People characterize needle exchange as the lesser of two evils or as a Band-Aid. It's definitely not the solution to drug abuse. It can be a solution to HIV and the transmission of HIV. You can recover from drug addiction. You cannot recover from HIV at this point.
I'd be interested in hearing just what you feel and what goes through your mind mm-hmm. when you're manning the needle exchange program and you see, I don't know if it's a line of addicts waiting for their needles or one by one, but and you're just spending your day meeting people who have, you know, an addiction.
What goes through my mind? Well, oftentimes it's so busy that I don't have really time to think about what I'm thinking about.
So you approach it very businesslike?
Businesslike in a way, but it's, a lot of people, since drug use is presented to us in such a simplistic fashion, either you use drugs or you don't, and drug behaviors go largely undefined, there's a big demonization of drug users. And people, you know, ask me, oh, aren't you terrified to go up to the Bronx and talk to drug users? And aren't you afraid for your life when you go up there? And they automatically assume that we operate our program at 4 o'clock in the morning or in the middle of the night, when in fact we go up there in the mornings and in the afternoons in broad daylight, and we talk to people who are very much like me and very much like the other people on the outreach volunteers in many, many ways, except for the fact that they inject drugs. It's a very empowering afternoon to have doing needle exchange, because you're talking to people who are taking some control of their health. They're, you know, saving their needles all week long. They're bringing them back. You know, some people have gained some sense of control over their drug use and can generalize that to other parts of their lives. So, you know, needle exchange, I think if people saw it, they might be disappointed. They might not see tons of bloody syringes all over the place, and they might not see, you know, many, many strung out people lined up and, you know, gunfights in the middle of the street. It's a lot more low-key than I think a lot of people would expect. You know, it's people who are bringing back their used needles to exchange them for new ones. And we talk about whatever. You know, we talk about drug use and we talk about treatment. But we also talk about the Persian Gulf War when that was happening.
Do you ever feel that you have to protect yourself, because addicts often become very paranoid because of the drug's effect on them, and also become very desperate because they need a lot of money to maintain their habit. And if you've become really addicted, chances are you might not be working anymore. You might not be functioning in a job very well anymore, even if you had one. So do you ever feel that you have to protect yourself against...
From our clients.
Yeah. Yeah, from clients who might be really, really paranoid and desperate.
You know, I suppose the potential for violence or for a threat is always there, but I don't really feel that it's there anymore on the needle exchange sites than it is on the subway when I ride the subway in New York. You know, people value the program a lot. Many people use the program and support the program in various ways, people on the street. People on the street know us, and in a lot of ways we're considered friends, and we consider our clients friends. We've never been threatened with violence. We've never been threatened, you know, that all of our needles would be taken away or robbed. You know, I really don't feel that at all, not any more than I do just living in New York City.
Rod Sorge directs ACT UP's Needle Exchange Program in New York City. This is Fresh Air.